This is Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the free weekly financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Macro Voices is all about the brightest minds in the world of finance and macroeconomics telling it like it is, bullish or bearish, no holds barred. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Townsend and Patrick Serezna.
Macro Voices episode 179 was recorded on August 8th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices is brought to you by TopTradersOnPlug.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing, which I highly recommend. Gold broke through $1,500 an ounce this week. That's fully $150 an ounce above the key resistance level at $1,350 to $1,377, which had been in place for the last 5 years. So we're bringing you a gold special this week, and there will be plenty more precious metals-related content in coming weeks on Macro Voices. Ronnie Sterfala, fund manager and principal author of the highly respected In Gold We Trust report, will be joining me as this week's feature interview guest, and we'll cover a host of topics ranging from fundamentals to current technical levels. Be sure to stay tuned for our post-game segment after the feature interview, when Patrick and I will take a big step back from our market wrap's usual short time frame perspective and discuss the big picture, explaining why I'm convinced that gold will be the asset to own in the next decade.
And I'm Patrick Serezna. Now, Eric, let's dive right into this S&P 500, because that's some pretty serious volatility we've been seeing. What's your take on what's happening in the markets?
Well, we've already retraced 50% of the panic move down. I think that it's probably no surprise that we had this panic move down. The question is, what's next? And I think it really hinges on what President Trump's intentions are. In the past, most of the time when he suddenly comes up with a bold tweet announcing that there's going to be some new aggressive policy, it seems to me that it's usually part of a negotiating strategy. And I won't be surprised if behind the scenes, you know, there's some negotiation and maybe we find out that this 10% tariff was more of a threat than an actual intention to impose that tariff long term. And I speculate that President Trump may be using it as a negotiating tactic to pressure China to agree to some kind of deal which is more in liking with what he desires. The thing is, and Dr. Pippa Malmgren talked about this in her All Stars episode, there's an attitude in the United States like, hey, we're the United States. We're in charge here. We've got all the power. We're holding all the cards. We're going to tell China how it's going to be, and they're going to play ball because we're the big dog. A lot of people outside the United States don't see it that way. They think China is holding more of the cards than the United States is. And I think there's a very real possibility that President Trump is very aggressive in his negotiations and gets to the point where he says, okay, I'm finally willing to make a concession and make a deal with you guys. And they say, no, thanks. Now, at the same time, same guest, Pippa Malmgren, has also said China is viewing this as this president, President Trump, will probably be their last chance to make the magnitude of deal that they would very much like to make. So both parties have a strong incentive to come to terms. And I think if they do come to terms, if we suddenly got an announcement that, okay, there's been another negotiation, turns out that Trump and Xi have been hanging out at Mar-a-Lago and everything's better now, I think we're going straight to all-time highs on the stock market, despite all of the economic slowdown and all of the very good reasons that I see to be bearish. I think that if this China thing blows over, it's probably going to take us back to all-time highs, even though it doesn't make sense to me. On the other hand, if you were going to see the beginning of a really big, bad bear market, this is what it would look like. A big panic spike down, 50% retrace, and then perhaps the selling resumes. So I think it really is a question of what policymakers are going to do next. And a truce with China would go one direction. More aggressive talk would probably take us back down and back down hard. But Patrick, I couldn't help as I was describing that, but think of the trade that you described in a webinar and also in some of our past post-game segments. For any new listeners who are not familiar with the calendared straddle trade, I'm guessing that you guys are knocking it out of the park with that trade. How's it been going with this recent volatility?
Well, the market drop that finally came here finally put the trade in motion. I mean, we were fighting the theta monster for months, and it was a little more challenging than the past two market tops. But with this break, we were able to roll down the call and lock it in. So we're in a pretty good situation here and looking to find out whether there's another round of selling coming in the weeks to come. Anyway, Eric, let's move on to the dollar index, because obviously we attempted to break to an all-time new high and then came right back into that range. What's your take on the dollar here?
Well, what some people are saying is they're saying, okay, this was a false breakout. You know, you broke above 98, and technical analysis tells you that if you break above a level and it doesn't last and you end up going back below that breakout zone, that's a false breakout. It's a very bearish signal. The way I see it, it's a little different than that. I think that the dollar bull case was at first being proven correct. That breakout past 98 and the rapid acceleration to the upside after the breakout, it all spelled dollar moving much higher, 104, here we come. Well, the fact that we've had a really big pullback in response to the President of the United States basically starting a currency war is really no surprise. The question is, what happens next? I'm still long dollar index futures. I'm still leaning towards the case that the global dollar liquidity squeeze, which is very, very real, is going to trump, pardon the pun, other factors in the market. And the reason I say that, Patrick, is that my leaning is I don't think that President Trump really wants to have a currency war with China. I think that he's talking tough and negotiating and eventually wants to make a deal and call a truce. If we really go into an all-out competitive devaluation currency war, no holds barred currency war, then that changes everything and we've really got to rethink the strategy on the dollar. But so far, I'm sticking with my bullish view. And as Jeff Snyder said, it's not really a bullish view in the sense of thinking the dollar is really strong and going to move higher for economic reasons. It's a, I think the price of the dollar goes up relative to other currencies because of the liquidity squeeze.
All right, well, let's move on to crude oil, because we see not only us trading right back down to the June lows, but Brent oil is trading all the way back towards January trade ranges. What's going on here in crude?
Well, let's start with the EIA. Crude oil building 2.4 million barrels. Everybody was expecting another drawdown after a long series of big drawdowns. Cushing, Oklahoma had a drawdown of 1.5 million barrels. That was smaller than expected, though. Gasoline building a massive 4.4 million barrels. Distillates building 1.6 million barrels. So we've got builds across the board. And needless to say, the tape action was a nosedive in reaction to that. We were already very hard down on the day before the data came out, and I think everybody was expecting a great big reversal as big drawdowns came in, and we got builds instead, and it was an instantaneous down. U.S. production ticked up to 12.3 million barrels. That's up 100,000 barrels. It's within 100,000 barrels of the all-time high set a few weeks ago. I think that's a really, really important point. The idea that some people were fearing, which is maybe U.S. production is going to start declining as the shale drillers are pressured by lower oil prices, hasn't happened yet. The U.S. production is still cranking along. Imports up to 7.1 million barrels. Exports down to only 1.9 million barrels. And I would think that the trade war tensions probably contributed to lower exports. There's your explanation right there for why we got all of these inventory builds. It's because of the very low export number combined with the high import number. Doesn't necessarily look to me like a sustainable trend. It may be just a one-off anomaly that we had a build this week. Be very interesting to see what the data tells us ahead. The thing is, as much as this was very bearish news, it resulted in an aggressive sell-off back down to just above $50. The low print was actually around 50 spot 55. $50 even has been a really, really strong support level recently. So if we break it decisively, I think we're going back down to the Christmas low of whatever it was, 44 or something. But on the other hand, Patrick, as I said, it's been a really solid support level. And something that everybody else seems to have forgotten about, but I haven't, is Iran. Yeah, I know that President Trump said he was willing to negotiate and work on things, but I don't see the risk of further conflict with Iran being totally out of the system yet. And that could be a catalyst for a move to the upside. Feels to me like we're a little bit oversold here. So we'll see what happens. But certainly, if the trade war gets bigger and gets worse, and it really looks like we're headed toward a global recession, then anything's possible to the downside.
Let's move on to gold, because we obviously have Ronnie coming on. But what's your take with gold above 1500?
Well, I'm going to save the big picture for the post-game segment. That's where we'll talk about the long-term outlook. What I want to talk about now in the market wrap is just what you said, that 1500, breaking above 1500, that was a serious news event. And something I noticed, there was no round number resistance. We basically went right through 1500 without, you know, usually you hit a round number like that and you kind of bounce off of it and trade off $50 and then come back and try it again and third time's the charm. We went straight through it. So I really think that this gold chart is looking incredibly bullish for the long term. But the caveat here is it's also starting to really take a parabolic form now. So I think it really comes down to the U.S. dollar currency war question. If we're going to see an escalation of tension with China, if we're really going to get into a currency war scenario, hey, there is no limit to the upside for gold. But if we were to see some kind of truce between Trump and Xi and they back off on the very aggressive rhetoric that's been coming from both sides recently, I think there's plenty of room for a very significant correction here. It's just a correction, but just to go back down and retest that breakout zone of 1350 to 1377, which would be a very typical thing after a breakout, you go back down, you retest what used to be a resistance level as a support level. That's $150 of downside. That's a pretty big correction. So I won't be surprised if that's in our future, especially if there's some kind of truce in this whole trade war thing. But if the trade war accelerates, there's no limit to the upside, Patrick.
All right, Eric, I want to move on to the 10-year Treasury yields because, wow, I mean, we went almost down to, or did we hit 160? Wow, just like it, just a drop in yield so quickly here. What's your take on all of this?
Holy cow, Patrick. You know, I thought we were going lower in yield, but we had gone so far so fast. I thought there's got to be some kind of a pullback here. I was waiting for that buying opportunity, and I missed it. And at this point, it's moved so far, I'm not going to chase it. I'm frustrated with myself for missing the trade. You didn't miss the trade, though. I know you and your members at Big Picture Trading have been long TLT for what, more than a year now. Give us a little bit of an update. And I think I saw that you sold yesterday. Do you think the move is over, or has it just gone so far so fast that it's time to take profits?
Yeah, we've been bullying the TLT for like 18 months, and it's just been a great run. But with this parabolic rise almost at the tail end here, it's like at some point you have to take your money. And while I still think yields can go much lower, at some stage when you have this kind of a move, you have to lock in those gains, right? And it's been a great move, and now we're just going to have to see how this continues to play out here. So Eric, why a gold special, and why Ronnie Stoferla?
Well, Patrick, I want to start with why a gold special. This will be the start of a trend here on Macro Voices toward a lot more precious metals content. And I've intentionally kind of gone soft on gold for the last several years. And the reason is I just feel that there are so many gold bug podcasts out there. There are so many of these guys that are just singing the story that it's always time to buy gold. If you want to hear that, there's lots of other places to hear it. Now, I will admit to having gotten a tactical call wrong. I thought that the dollar breakout, which does still appear to be happening, I'm still leaning toward that happening, I thought it was going to create a headwind for gold and that it wasn't quite time yet. And I was wrong on that call. It's pretty clear now from this breakout that we're moving into something that I've anticipated for many years. I've always said that gold is not going to be just an interesting asset, but it's going to be the asset to own in the 2020s. And Ray Dalio did a better job of articulating the reasons than I could possibly do. We had a link a couple of weeks ago in the research roundup to his article on this subject. Essentially, we've got dual bubbles in the stock and bond markets. Financial markets are being held up by central bank supplied liquidity. And that's an unsustainable long-term pattern. It can't go on forever. Exactly when it will end and when we're going to experience what Ray Dalio calls a paradigm shift is not completely clear. But what the gold market is telling us is it maybe is started a little sooner than I thought it was going to start. So I feel that there's lots and lots of coverage in the podcast world about precious metals, and especially some of the conspiracy theories and you know, how you can put J.P. Morgan out of business by buying silver coins. That always was a source of amusement to me to read that stuff. We're not going to do that. We're going to do gold for grown-ups, because it really is a very important asset class to understand for the next decade, and I think it's going to be incredibly important. I wanted to start with a well-respected guest. And Ronnie has a very broad background. He's the principal author of In Gold We Trust, which is an annual report that covers the fundamentals. He talks about comparing gold versus cryptocurrencies and, you know, all of these different subjects, physical vaulting of gold, allocated and unallocated storage, a whole bunch of concepts that we will be getting into in future episodes of Macro Voices. Ronnie just seemed like a really solid guy who's not another conspiracy theorist, but somebody who really understands this market. So I wanted to start with him, and we'll be having more precious metals oriented content in the weeks and months ahead. And this episode of Macro Voices with Ronnie Sterfala was made possible by toptradersonplug.com. You often hear me say that even if I have conviction about a market or a trade, you have to listen to what the market is telling you, not what you think it should be doing. And that's exactly what trend following managers have been doing for decades with great success. These are rules-based strategies that remove human emotions and therefore can be well-researched and tested. And there's one podcast that covers trend following strategies better than any other, toptradersunplugged.com. And right now, Macro Voices listeners can even get a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following, explaining exactly how these systematic strategies can work for you. Just go to toptradersunplugged.com/macro to claim your free copy. Again, that's toptradersunplugged.com/macro. Check them out. You'll be glad you did.
Well, Eric's interview with Ronnie Sterfala is coming up as Macro Voices continues right here at macrovoices.com.
And now, with this week's special guest, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Gold is on everyone's mind this week, and we've got a gold heavyweight for you for today's feature interview. I'm joined now by Ronnie Sterfala, who is managing partner, founder, and fund manager for Incrementum. He's also probably best known as the principal author of In Gold We Trust, which is probably one of the most respected, I think it's annually republished documents that really makes the whole fundamental case. If you haven't read it yet, I strongly recommend it, and we do have it linked to your Research Roundup email. Ronnie, thanks so much for joining us. I want to dive into some fairly advanced topics with you today, but just for the benefit of any newer listeners who may not be familiar with the high-level picture, let's start with gold. Why is it so important? Why is I'm convinced it will be the asset to own in the next decade, but let's hear it from you, your perspective. Why would we care about gold in our portfolios?
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me. It's been a while, and I'm really looking forward to this. Well, I have to say that gold is an extremely emotional topic. It seems that everybody has an opinion on gold. They're either radical gold bugs or people that hate gold. So from my point of view, I'm not a radical gold fundamentalist. It is not a religion. It is a prudent, and I would say some sort of an inexpensive hedge against recession risks, against equity risks, and inflation. So my finance guy view on gold is that it's some sort of an option on aggressive monetary policies, a potential monetary endgame. It is a zero-yielding asset, of course, and therefore a long-duration asset. And as currently, as the market moves to the view of lower interest rates, gold should not only begin to outperform shorter duration asset classes, it should also continue to show a very high inverse correlation to bond yields. This is basically what we're seeing at the moment, but nothing more, nothing less. So that's kind of the finance guy view that I have on gold. On the other hand, I'm writing the In Gold We Trust report for 13 years now, and many people think this must be the most boring job one can have, but we published more than 3,000 pages of research about gold and all influencing factors, and it's still continues to fascinate me because there's so many different things involved. Of course, opportunity costs like equity markets, bond markets, inflation. It's about geopolitics. It's about development in our society. So I think it's really something extremely fascinating. It is no coincidence that the history of the world is also a history of gold. And if you study gold, you will learn that basically it is precious and valued on every continent, in every religion, in every society. So if you learn about monetary history, of course you learn about gold. And that's a bit something that perhaps differentiates us from many other people in the gold industry. We really try to make this holistic view. As you can hear, perhaps I'm not only, I've got an Austrian accent, so I was born in Vienna, and therefore I very much adhere to the Austrian school of economics. And therefore, what's really important for us is to explain people stuff like the stock to flow ratio, for example. I often hear that the annual supply and annual demand for gold is so important, but that's totally, totally useless. We once called that the greatest misunderstanding in the gold sector. So if you understand the stock to flow ratio of gold, you will see gold from a completely different viewpoint. And those are the things that we try to analyze and to explain in our reports. And I think that's something that makes us a bit different from the rest of the analysts in the gold space.
I want to talk now about something that's probably the hardest thing in trading, which is getting the timing right. Sometimes when an asset makes a big, sudden move, it's a signal. You want to jump on it because it's the beginning of something really, really big. But almost, I'd say more often, those big moves, if you chase them, you know, there ends up being a retrace and you get clobbered. Is it time here with the really big move that we've seen up in gold in recent weeks to the upside? Is it time to fade it because it's overdue for a retrace, or is it time to really feel like, hey, this thing is really taking off? We're going to jump in with both feet here.
Well, I think we will going to talk about the technical details a bit later on, but from my point of view, it is crystal clear we are in a bull market again. You can see that every dip is being bought at the moment. You can see that even diehard gold bucks, they still not really believe in this move. And from what I see, talking to institutional clients, we have seen that in fourth quarter 2018, when basically every asset class was down, stocks had their worst performance in December since the Great Depression. This was a big warning shot for many institutional investors. And I think then gold reappeared on their radar screens. Of course, then first quarter was pretty good, especially for equity markets. But now as we're above this massive resistance zone at 1360, 1380. This is basically exactly what we explained in our 2019 gold report. We have seen massive momentum kicking in. We have seen that institutional buyers were going into gold again, massive flows in the ETFs, in the physical market, but also in the mining stocks. From my point of view, Eric, there at the moment, we're in some sort of a macro regime shift. So we have seen more and more dovish comments by central banks. We are seeing all those really complex trade and geopolitics and recession risks strengthening. So the breakout of gold is basically some sort of a recalibration of commonly accepted macroeconomic fundamentals. I think we are pricing in or discounting recession risks. So from our point of view, from a longer perspective, we really like the commodity complex at the moment because gold has now taken the leadership role, a bit like in the commodity upturn in 1976, 1977. Now silver is following, and we wouldn't be surprised if commodity would be next. We make the case, we compare the current situation a bit to the 1970s and the 2000s, where we first had extremely expansionary and aggressive monetary policy, then a booming stock market, and subsequently a decade of surging commodity prices. So we have seen very, very aggressive and, let's say, experimental monetary policy, but it hasn't reached commodity markets and the gold market yet. So this is one of our core theses. The second one that I want to briefly talk about is inflation. Of course, gold is highly correlated to inflation. We know that the US dollar is or has been some sort of the linchpin of this deflationary mindset. And therefore, I think, you know, the strong dollar has kept commodity prices, has constrained growth in emerging markets and fueled capital flows to the US. It seems that this is now changing. For inflation, I think that June was the low and we expect rising inflation in fourth quarter. We have seen just recently the PCE rose quite sharply. On the other hand, 5-year break-even rates just fell to 1.4%. And we are also seeing deflationary pressure with, you know, MZM, but also M2 growth being pretty sluggish. But it seems that, you know, this inflationary pressure, and this is exactly what central bankers and politicians want to achieve. This is building and probably in the next couple of quarters, inflation might become a concern. We shouldn't forget at the moment, there's probably like 13 trillion in bonds with negative yields. My home country, Austria, just sold a century bond with a yield of 1.2%. So actually for governments, the biggest hope is rising inflation, while for investors, that's probably the biggest pain trade that you can imagine, rising inflation. And it is very much of a contrarian topic nowadays. The second reason why I think that gold might be a pretty good idea at the moment is that it's a pretty good equities hedge. We have seen that in fourth quarter, basically every asset class was down. But mining stocks, gold mining stocks were up 17% and gold was up 7% too. So gold worked well as a portfolio hedge. And now we're seeing we're working quite a lot with ratio charts and the ratio charts of gold and gold stocks versus the S&P 500 just broke out. And this is a very, very strong sign for us. When it comes to the equity markets, I mean, that's no secret for you and your listeners. We are in an earnings recession. So we've basically seen three quarters in a row with falling profits. We're seeing pretty big divergences in equity markets. So basically, the S&P and the Nasdaq is one of the very, very few really strong equity markets. I mean, today, not so much. And most of the other equity markets all over the globe, they are already showing lower highs. So there's a big divergence. It's also internally in the US, you know, Dow Jones Transports, the small caps, they are already pretty weak. Then we're seeing losing momentum. We're seeing pretty low volume in US equity markets. So we are, from my point of view, in a process of rolling over. And what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, this unusual calmness and the deterioration in breath, it's not a very good setup for pretty overvalued stocks, I would say. So the big question from a portfolio point of view is, will bonds again be a good equities hedge in the next downturn? We shouldn't forget in 2008, US treasuries were trading at yields around 3.5 to 4% before the downturn. The 10-year bonds from Germany had a yield of 4%. Now, even the 30-year German yields are negative. So from my point of view, gold might be a much better hedge than bonds in the next bear market. And then the third point is gold as a recession hedge. We crunched the numbers in our last gold reports and is absolutely sure that gold is a very, very good hedge in recessions. We're already seeing that the bond market has perfectly signaled that, yeah, we're seeing some sort of a global cooling. In the US, I think it's a bit different as we're seeing that government spending is skyrocketing higher. It was up 5% annualized. While in the Eurozone, it seems that we're really, of course, especially Germany, but also France, Spain, and so on, they're coming in weaker and weaker. And it's not only the Eurozone, it is really a synchronized global slowdown. So Mrs. Thunberg, she might be scared of this global cooling that we are seeing at the moment. In 64% of the world, we are seeing PMIs coming in negative. 11 countries, that's according to Dave Rosenberg, 11 countries have posted at least one negative quarterly contraction, and 16 central banks have cut rates already. So from my point of view, in this, you know, we are seeing a pretty long period of growth. I still believe in cycles, although central bankers want to get rid of those economic cycles. So from my point of view, a recession, and the recession is something just normal, something healthy, is around the corner. Perhaps we're already in a pre-recession phase. And gold, according to our research, is a pretty good diversifier and a pretty good hedge in a recessionary environment.
Ronnie, for dollar bears, this is easy. If you think the dollar is done here, it's so easy. You're way late, but you want to be in gold. But a lot of us, myself included, feel that there is a very strong argument that there's been a U.S. dollar liquidity squeeze globally, and that is causing the dollar to appreciate against other currencies, and that would potentially create a headwind for gold. So for U.S. dollar-based investors who care about what their ultimate return is in U.S. dollars, that was a real concern. Now, in the last few days with President Trump's actions on China, we've seen the U.S. dollar take a nosedive. But before that, it really was breaking out above, just as gold broke above a key technical level, the dollar was also breaking out. And I guess what it really brings to my mind is, you know, for a long time, I've argued that someday we're going to get to where gold and the dollar move up together. And frankly, that's not a good thing. That means that the world is getting really scary, where there's a double safety trade into both gold and dollars at the same time, and they both move up. Is that already happening? Is that what we're seeing here? Or is there more to this story? And you know, how do you feel about the dollar? How do you feel about a U.S. dollar gold long pairs trade? What do you see in terms of the relationship with the dollar?
Well, you know, I love listening to your show, and I'm very proud to call Brent Johnson, but also Luke Roman, friends of mine, and we did lots of work together with them. We interviewed them for the In Gold We Trust report. So I think actually their views are pretty similar. It's just that the timing is the big difference. From my point of view, you know, our clients are mostly euro or Swiss franc based. So I would say, if you compare on a longer term basis, the euro versus the US dollar performance, it is actually very, very similar. You know, just like since 2004, for example, the annual average performance in dollar terms of gold is 9.3%, while on a euro basis, it's 10.3%. So that's not a very, very big difference, actually. The only paper currency that really, really outperformed, I would say, on a relative basis, so where this loss of purchasing power wasn't that dramatic since 1971. We are calculating most of our numbers since 1971 because that was like the beginning of this new monetary era, was the Swiss franc. And it's no coincidence because the Swiss franc until May 2000 was backed with 40% gold. And this was one of the main reasons why the Swiss franc has always been this safe haven currency. So from my point of view, it is, I can really understand and follow the case that you and also Brent Johnson make for a strong dollar within the environment of a liquidity crunch. The question is, what would then happen? We would see major volatility in emerging markets. We would see very strong deflationary pressure in the US. And actually, that's the very last thing that Donald Trump and the Federal Reserve want. So I expect that they would take countermeasures pretty quickly. Of course, the big difference or the big question is also always the time lag. You know, let's remember what happened in 2008 and when equity markets really started to move. That was like 5 months after, basically. From my point of view, when it comes to the correlation between gold and the US dollar, we wrote about that last year. And of course, the consensus always seems to be that a strong dollar automatically means lower gold prices. And this theory can empirically be substantiated. So the negative correlation is 0.5. But our quantitative analysis shows that there's some sort of an asymmetrical correlation. So a strong US dollar does much less damage to the gold price than a weak US dollar does to gold. And it seems that this historical pattern is currently changing. From my point of view, I'm not 100% sure about the reason of this change. And it seems that this, what we call the autonomous rate of increase, so the rate of the gold price increase that is independent of exchange rate fluctuations, might continue to rise. And I think the main reason is probably that 70% of all gold demand is nowadays coming from emerging markets. So we'll see. What's good for the US dollar doesn't always have to be bad for gold. We're seeing at the moment that gold is pretty strong, that equity markets are extremely weak, and that at the moment this safe haven move into the US dollar doesn't really happen. We wrote recently that the US dollar feels like a stock that doesn't rise on good news anymore. So, I mean, structurally, I wouldn't say that I'm a big euro bull. But it is like, you know, I have never met in the last couple of months probably somebody being really bullish to euro. It is a bit like finding a polar bear in the Sahara, or I once said like a good song on a Britney Spears album. So, I mean, we're having so many troubles over here. You know, there's the Brexit mess, Italy's open rebellion against the stability pact. We've got the yellow vests in France. We've got Germany being on the verge of a recession. But still, the euro, from my point of view, is holding up pretty much okay. So the reaction to the news, from my point of view, is pretty strong. So long story short, from my point of view, going forward, it won't be a huge difference if you hold gold in euro, in US dollar terms, or in whatever other fiat currency. I think it's just a very, very good hedge and a very safe currency going forward.
Ronnie, a lot of really smart people have convinced themselves that the 35-plus year bond bull market ended in 2016 and that we are now in a secular bear market, meaning that we should expect steadily increasing interest rates, which of course would compete with gold, because the more you've got real interest rates as an alternative to gold, which is a zero-yielding asset, the more that tends to hurt gold. So that doesn't happen to be my view. I don't agree with that, but a lot of smart people think that. So if that were true, if the bond bull market really is over, how would that affect the outlook for gold?
First of all, I would say I don't think that the US Treasury's bull market is over. I mean, over here in Europe, you've seen that now even 30-year bonds are trading with negative yields. If you follow the European bond markets, it really looks like this blow-off top that comes at the very end of every trend. So from my point of view, the developments over here in the Eurozone are really scary, and every pension fund managers that buys, you know, German 10 years with significantly negative rates now guarantees that he's going to destroy capital. When it comes to the US, I'm not sure. I from my point of view, I sense that we will see zero yields for US treasuries before we see 5%. So why shouldn't US treasuries trade at zero yields or even negative yields in the course of a next recession? Eric, I remember a couple of years ago we had a meeting and I think the Bund future was trading at 120 or 121. It must have been like 2011, 2012. And somebody told me that it is mathematically impossible that the bond future would trade above 160 because that would basically imply negative yields. Now the bond future is trading at 175. So why shouldn't US treasuries go significantly lower? And I don't see any blow off top in US treasuries at the moment. Of course, the 2 years made a big move. The 10 years make a big move, but I don't see such a big move yet in the treasuries. And, you know, normally equities, you know, the bond market has been sort of diverging from equities. Normally, I would say the bond market is right and he signaled this global cool down pretty well. So from my point of view, having a short position or no position in equities probably is a pretty safe bet. And as I've said, I think the 10 years, I mean, they're not cheap anymore, but from my point of view, they rather go to 0% before they go to 5%.
10 years ago, when Russian economist Sergei Glazyev started this de-dollarization campaign, trying to persuade countries around the world to reduce their use of U.S. dollars in order to reduce the ability of the U.S. government to control the financial system through its currency. Frankly, at the time, 10 years ago, when that started, it was ignored by most of the world. But it's really come around to the point now where even the European Union has warmed up to this idea of eliminating dependence on the U.S. dollar. So what does this mean for gold? And I guess it also brings a related question to mind, which is how much do we really know about sovereign gold holdings and the trends? Because that certainly is an indication. If people really do want to dump the dollar, then you would expect to see more increases in sovereign gold holdings around the world.
When it comes to sovereign gold holdings, as far as I know it from, you know, conversations with central bankers, I think the gold community often thinks that everything central bankers do is just sit on their Bloomberg screens and just follow the price of gold. I think for them, it is something that, of course, they have a look at, but it is not something that they focus on every time. So I think this is a bit of a misinterpretation in the gold scene quite often. But this de-dollarization that we're seeing at the moment, that's a big trend. And I think many people think that the US dollar will be, you know, kicked from the throne by the Chinese yuan, by the euro, whatever. But if you study the history of reserve currencies, you can see that it always takes many, many years, mostly decades. And we just finished reading this wonderful book by Barry Eichengreen about reserve currencies and the fate of reserve currencies. And you can see that basically the British pound and the US dollar, there were basically both reserve currencies alongside each other for many decades. But we are seeing a strong trend when it comes to gold from emerging markets. And if we take a step back, I would say it's interesting that gold always moves out of countries where the capital stock is declining, and it flows into countries where capital accumulation is taking place, where the economy is prospering, and where the volume of savings is increasing. We've seen that, you know, the Romans realized that more than 2000 years ago, when the Chinese and the Indians accepted only gold and not Roman goods in exchange for spices and silk. So gold goes where the money is, and it came to the United States between the World Wars I and II. Remember, the US had more than 30,000 tons of gold, which also, of course, later on was the basic for the Bretton Woods Agreement, I would say. Then it was transferred to Europe in the post-war period. We've seen the gold drain on the Germans and the French, of course, wanting their gold back. Then it went to Japan, to the Middle East in the 1970s and 1980s. And now it is going to China, it is going to Russia, it is going to India, to Vietnam. We travel those countries quite a lot. We just started publishing the In Gold We Trust report in Chinese as well. And you can tell, you know, those guys, they're really in for the long game. They don't care about daily price fluctuations. They really want to accumulate gold on a monthly basis. They see it as a monetary hedge. And we shouldn't forget that in 2020, 50% of the world GDP will be generated by emerging markets, while in 2000, it was only 19%. So I think this is some sort of friend of mine calls this the love trade, with those emerging market economies really, really having a high affinity for gold. And we're not seeing it for the central banks, where, of course, Russia, China, but also recently Turkey, Poland, and so on, they are buying gold. It is also private people from those countries. Last year, we have seen that central banks purchased 650 tons of gold. This year, according to the World Gold Council, it will probably be 750 tons. So it is really a big increase compared to the last couple of years. And we're seeing, for example, I mentioned Poland. Poland is the largest purchaser in the last quarter. They bought more than 100 tons. And it is not only that they're buying gold, they're also repatriating it. And this brings me to this loss of trust on the international level that we were describing in the last gold report. And I think there's, in general, many, many things going on with this whole de-dollarization. So Europe has taken, you know, the new US sanctions against Iran and now wants to build up the infrastructure when it comes to payment systems. Jean-Claude Juncker, he just said that it is absurd that Europe imports crude oil and gas worth around 300 billion annually, but pays 80 to 90% of those imports in US dollars. So I think there's quite a lot going on with this de-dollarization, but people should not forget that this is really a long-term topic and a long-term trend. And of course, this trend will also have an impact on gold. Gold plays a major role in this de-dollarization game, but we should not overestimate the impact, I would say, on the shorter-term price movements in gold.
Ronnie, there has been a global change of social attitude. The social landscape is changing. There's been a rise of populism. A lot of younger people are very openly advocating a departure from capitalism in favor of socialism. We've also seen central bank policy already starting to favor zero or negative interest rates, modern monetary theory, which advocates monetization of government spending, has become extremely popular. So it seems like, and I guess the other thing is that at some point we all know there's an inevitable day of reckoning for all of the unfunded liabilities in the form of pension entitlements and so forth that cannot possibly be paid in the long run. How do all these things affect the long-term story for gold?
Well, that's a tough one. And, you know, Eric, I've got three little daughters. And, you know, the change in the social landscape, all the populism from the very right and very left side of the spectrum, this is something that really concerns me. And, yeah, it gives me a sleepless night sometimes. We have written about this matter of trust this year. So this was basically the leitmotif. We wrote Gold in the Age of Eroding Trust. And actually, when I 13 years ago, when I was a young analyst sitting in a bank, when I wrote my first In Gold with Trust report, I didn't realize that this name is a really good one, In Gold with Trust. But actually, for this year's report, we studied the matter of trust quite a lot. It might sound a bit philosophical, but trust is the basic value of all interpersonal cooperation, and it is basically the foundation of our social order. And we're seeing at the moment this erosion of trust capital. We're seeing it in society. We're seeing it, of course, in media. We're also seeing it in concepts like fundamental concepts of science. We're quoting some articles showing that the Flat Earth Society, for example, it is incredible how many people nowadays started believing in this stuff. And this is a sign that people lose trust in those fundamental concepts of science. And of course, we're seeing this loss of trust in politics. We're seeing this loss of trust in institutions. And it is pretty frightening. There is the General Social Survey for the US, and it shows that since 2000, confidence in all institutions has eroded. So at the moment, only one in five persons still has any confidence in banks, churches, or businesses, and only one in 10 in government. And I'm not sure if it's similar in North America, but over here in Europe, it seems that the level of polarization, of xenophobia, of nationalism, the loss of the middle class in the political realm is really, really frightening. It's scary. There's a huge, let's say, divide in society. And the interesting thing is, I think Dave Rosenberg wrote about that quite recently. At the moment, we're probably at the peak of the stock market cycle and the economic expansion. Now, if you remember the Occupy Wall Street movement that began in September 2011. It was pretty peaceful. But now the next recession and the next stock market correction, crash, whatever, will happen with income and wealth disparities basically at the highest levels ever. So I'm not sure if the next Occupy Wall Street movement or whatever will be that peaceful again. And so this is something that's really a big concern for us over here. And this is also why I think that the 2020 US presidential elections are so important, because it is going to be a vote for extreme or against extreme policy proposals. I don't know if there's any voice of fiscal conservatism, of a balanced budget and spending within our means, but so far I don't really hear that voice. And the thing is, when it comes to MMT, and I think this will become a much, much bigger topic in the course of the campaigns, it is only, a friend of mine said, it's only the newest addition to the central banker alphabet soup. So those new acronyms like QE or LTRO, they always sound extremely sophisticated, but MMT is just a new darling of the inflationists. And from my point of view, I've said earlier that I'm very much influenced by the Austrian School of Economics. Eugen von Böhm-Barwerk, he said, political power can never invalidate the economic law. And this is what we're trying to do. We try to invalidate the economic law. And this won't happen very well. We've tried that in Weimar Republic and it ended catastrophically. So from my point of view, coming back to financial markets, if some sort of MMT will be introduced, it will perhaps be a bit more fair for people, and it will have much more direct effects and quicker effects on the economy and especially on inflation. So I think if MMT really in some sort will be introduced, I think this might really be the point when the inflation genie gets out of the bottle.
John Maynard Keynes famously referred to the gold standard as a barbarous relic. And we have a new generation who are calling gold a barbarous relic. And their argument is, look, the whole point of gold was that it was a way to have an asset outside of the financial system that derived its value principally from its scarcity. And their argument is cryptocurrency creates a new way of essentially a high-tech solution to that problem that's better than gold. Now that we have cryptocurrency, forget about gold. It's on the way out. I personally couldn't disagree with that particular view more strongly than I do myself. But for those who may hold that view, what's your perspective?
Well, when it comes to cryptos, it seems I mentioned in the beginning that gold is a very, very emotional topic and everybody seems to have a view on gold. But when it comes to Bitcoin, it is even more emotional. So, you know, from my point of view, there's actually quite a lot of similarities between gold and Bitcoin. And when you read the white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto, you can see that actually Satoshi understood gold and he understood the stock to flow ratio. My colleagues, they are publishing a crypto research report where we basically want to educate people about the advantages and disadvantages, about the flaws and the scams in the crypto scene. They regard gold as Bitcoin without electricity. So from my point of view, they are relatives, but not like father and son, like, you know, what was it, Darth Vader and his son Luke Skywalker. I think they're rather like cousins. And therefore, I think it's pretty strange when people from the gold industry attack people from the crypto industry and the other way around, because both are basically anti-government monies. And I think these new technologies that are coming up, they are a direct consequence of the erosion of confidence in our international monetary policies. So from my point of view, the stock to flow ratio that is so important for gold, you know, there's 190,000 tons of gold and the annual inflation is 3,200 tons. So basically 1.7%. It is pretty similar when it comes to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's inflation rate at the moment is 3.6% and it will slope lower. So, you know, the amount and the supply of newly Bitcoins, it kind of follows a pre-programmed, transparent, and predictable schedule. And this is totally unaffected by fluctuations in demand. So this extremely inelastic supply makes the prices of gold and Bitcoin completely dependent on their demand and not on the supply, I would say. So I think that when it comes to gold, physical gold, let's say, it is for the younger generation, for the millennials, it is, you know, it might be a barbarous relic. They don't care about physical gold. But at the moment, there are many gold-backed crypto things coming up, gold-backed stable coins and so on. I'm pretty critical when it comes to that because they are centralized. There is counterparty risk. Some of them are extremely expensive. So there's quite a lot of trust required for those gold-backed cryptocurrencies. But from my point of view, and you know what's going on in the scene, there's so much financial but also human resource moving into this market. I think it's really interesting what's developing in this whole ecosystem. So the big question for an investor, and I have to say that we're about to launch a strategy with physical gold, 75% and 25% Bitcoin. The big question is, how will Bitcoin perform in a recession or a market crash? Because we haven't experienced a full cycle yet. From my point of view, I would say it will perform pretty good because there's very, very little credit involved in the Bitcoin and in the crypto market. So normally within the bear market or a crash, it's a reallocation of credit, it's a restructuring. So I think this is the main reason why those cycles in crypto are much shorter than general market cycles. But going forward, I think, you know, Eric, will Bitcoin be around in 10 years? I'm not sure. But if it will be around, I think it will be significantly higher. I don't know, 50, 100,000, whatever. Or it will go to zero. For gold, I'm absolutely certain that it will be around in 10 years and then that it will have a monetary aspect and that it's going to probably protect you from monetary policy, from inflation and so on. But I think, to put it in a nutshell, I think that crypto assets are here to stay. And in 5 to 10 years, I think it will be pretty normal for every asset allocator to have at least some allocation in crypto assets.
I want to pick up on something you mentioned a couple of times in that last answer, which was physical gold bullion. There's an argument that a lot of people have made, which is, look, if your reason for wanting to own gold in the first place is that it gives you some insulation from things going wrong in the financial system, then you don't want to own your gold through the financial system. So so-called paper gold instruments, such as shares in an ETF or futures contracts, they say are not as good as owning physical gold in your possession. To what extent is that real? And if we look at something like even some of the funds that you manage, you know, on one hand, you're running physical gold strategies, actually vaulting the bullion. But if someone's investing with you through a fund, to some extent, that's a paper instrument. They've got ownership in a fund that you're managing through a piece of paper they hold. They don't have the gold in their own possession. What are the trade-offs in terms of physically holding your own bullion versus owning it through a financial asset like ETF shares?
Well, I think the answer is pretty easy. Every time somebody says, you know, but it's I don't want to have paper exposure, and I say, okay, then buy physical gold. I mean, that's fairly easy and not expensive, and then you only have to care about, you know, how to store it. I think this whole paper versus physical gold discussion, I think sometimes it's a bit naive because we've got the same are even more extreme ratios when it comes, you know, to the paper oil or the paper copper market, but nobody is talking about that. So I think we should not forget that gold is one of the most liquid currencies. It is basically traded 24/7. It's got very, very tight spreads. And this, from my point of view, is also the reason why in liquidity crises, gold is often sold. And then most people say, okay, gold is now manipulated. But I think it is basically funds, hedge funds, that desperately have to get liquidity, just dumping their gold futures, That's the main reason. But I think when it comes to funds, I mean, we're managing some gold strategies. Of course, gold is not in our possession. It is in the possession of the fund. So in German, it's called Sondervermögen. That means, yeah, it's very, very much safeguarded. So I wouldn't take that as a criticism. But on the other hand, you know, if you really want to hedge against extreme scenarios, if you want to really have what I call safety gold, then just buy physical gold. But if you want to make performance, then you can buy mining stocks, then you can buy futures, options, whatever. But I think people have to ask this question first. What is the motivation? Do I want to hedge against extreme scenarios or do I want to make performance?
Ronnie, final question. Let's talk about technical levels. Is right now a good time to be buying or is it time to wait for a pullback after this really big move up that we've already seen in recent weeks?
Well, I think we're, as I've said at the beginning, we're in a bull market. There will, of course, be pullbacks. And I think it seems that gold is really back on the watch list and everybody wants to get in. We have seen a very strong US dollar in July and gold held up extremely well. We have seen some profit taking after the rally, but it doesn't look toppy to me. And, you know, I think the whole breakout happened on very large volume, pretty negative sentiment. And this big breakout from the four-year consolidation area, basically that the measured move would be, you know, the zone, the consolidation zone was $300. So basically the measured move would be up to 1650. We're seeing positioning when it comes to commitment of traders report. Many people think it's negative, but I think this switch to gross COT longs that we have seen dominating the flows is just a sign and indicative of this buy the dip mentality. And there's still remarkably few gold bulls in financial markets. According to the World Gold Council, we have seen ETFs at 2,500 tons at the moment, which is worth 120 billion. So that's still fairly small, I would say, relative to other asset classes. I think, you know, Isaac Newton once said, truth is to be found in simplicity. And if you have a look at the monthly and the quarterly chart of gold, it looks fantastic. It is confirmed by the mining stocks that look extremely good at the moment. It is supported by strong seasonals. Pre-election years are very positive. The second half of the year is especially strong. We are seeing that gold stocks, we crunched the numbers in the past 65 years, in 11 of 13 rate cut cycles, gold stocks averaged a return of 172%. So I think, you know, we're back in the bull market and just let's ride this bull market.
Ronnie, I can't thank you enough for a fantastic interview. But before I let you go, please tell our listeners, first of all, what they can expect to find in the In Gold We Trust report, which they can find the download link in their Research Roundup email. Folks, if you're not yet registered, just go to our homepage, look for the red button that says looking for the downloads next to Ronnie's picture. And also tell us a little bit more about what you do at Incrementum and where people can learn more about your services.
Yeah, thanks, Eric, again for having me. It's been great fun. Well, the In Gold We Trust report, we are publishing it for 13 years in German, in English, and now in Mandarin. There's an extended version with roughly 340 pages, so you really have to take off at least a weekend to work through it. But it's a really high-level or holistic analysis of the gold market, about opportunity costs, about hyperinflation, about gold and Bitcoin, about mining stocks, technical analysis, and so on. You can register for it. It's totally for free. This is basically, I feel a bit like a distillery. So I read quite a lot, books, research, whatever. And then I try to distill it once a year into the In Gold We Trust report on ingoldwetrust.li, which stands for Liechtenstein, where Incrementum is based. Incrementum is an independent and owned by, you know, entrepreneurs, wealth manager, based in the Principality of Liechtenstein, very, very good jurisdiction, probably the best within Europe, I would say. We're managing funds. We're doing wealth management for high net worth individuals. And you can have a look at our funds that are mostly, I would say, in the precious metals and commodity space on our webpage, www.incrementum.li.
Ronnie, I can't thank you enough. Patrick Ceresna and I will be back as Macro Voices continues right here at macrovoices.com.
Macro Voices is a listener-driven program. Please email requests for specific future interview guests to requests@macrovoices.com. You can email questions for the program to mailbag@macrovoices.com, and we'll answer them on the air from time to time in our mailbag segment. We also welcome your suggestions for how we can improve the program. Now, back to your hosts, Eric Townsend and Patrick Ceresna.
Eric, it was great to have Ronnie on the show. It's a great way to start our entire project to get more coverage on gold on Macro Voices. So you've been for the longest time talking about gold being the asset to own going forward. And so why don't we take a dive into that? And why don't you start us off with your kind of views or your take as to what's going on here in gold?
Patrick, the reason that I have always said that gold will be the asset to own is because the entire economic regime that we've been in for the last 10 years is one of central banks propping up asset markets with liquidity, which is money conjured into existence out of thin air through quantitative easing. That has gone on and continued to work for longer than I ever thought possible. But even Ray Dalio has been very clear saying, look, I don't know exactly when, but it can't go on much longer. And at some point, we're going to go through a paradigm shift. We have dual bubbles in both the stock market and the bond market. Nothing is cheap. There's nothing for value investors to buy. The real problem that we had in 2008 was too much debt. We have done exactly nothing to solve that problem. What we've done is paper over our problems by propping asset markets up through central bank supplied liquidity. Now, at some point, we've got to deal with the real problem. And there's really only one way that you can deal with that problem. Actually, two ways. You can default completely, which I don't think is going to happen, or you can devalue the currency in order to inflate away the value of all of that excessive debt. And that pretty much is the only option that's going to exist here once the central bank liquidity game stops working. When exactly it stops working? Are we seeing this current breakout in gold signaling to us that it has stopped working? Maybe. Maybe it's got a couple of years left to go. But before too long, Patrick, we're going to come into what Ray Dalio calls a paradigm shift and a new paradigm in which the only way for central banks to deal with the problems that we have is to devalue the currency and inflate away the value of all of that excessive debt. That has to mean that you're losing real purchasing value by holding dollars. And even though your stock prices may be going up, you might still see the stock market going up. The actual purchasing value of how many loaves of bread you can buy by selling a share of stock is going to go down as the value of the dollar itself goes down. Gold is the time-proven hedge against that. Now, I didn't think it was quite time for this yet, but as you've heard me say, even in the sponsor message in today's episode, you got to go by what the market is telling you, not what you think is supposed to happen. What I thought was supposed to happen was the global dollar liquidity squeeze, which is very real. I thought it was going to provide more of a headwind for gold than it has, and it did provide some headwind for gold, but gold is still breaking out, even despite dollar strength. So it says the game is on for gold. It's time for us to really get serious about something I've always known was coming. I didn't really focus on it, as I described before the feature interview, because there's so many other people covering gold. Now that it's timely and it really is coming into view as an asset class that we need to understand, I think it's time for us to add a lot more coverage. And there's a lot of topics that we didn't get into in this interview because we didn't have time. We didn't talk about physical vaulting of gold, paper versus physical, and all of the allocated versus unallocated bullion accounts and so on and so forth. We didn't have time to get into any of that. So we've got a lot more coming in future episodes, but why don't we go ahead and start with the chart book that you prepared, Patrick?
Absolutely. And our listeners that want to have a look at that chart book can download it from their Research Roundup email or go to the Macro Voices homepage where there's a red button in the center saying looking for downloads. So on page two here, Eric, I just have that monthly chart of gold going back to 2001 where the lows came in. And you can see that pronounced bull market from 2000 to 2011, that awful bear market that we've seen that since then that put in its lows in 2016. But what really is the notable thing that I think everyone is identifying is that this kind of 6-year trade ranged bottoming formation almost in gold has finally seen that big breakout. And for me, the breakout looks very real. But as a technician, I think the single most important thing is to see that when inevitably some profit taking starts to happen, will it be well supported, and will pullbacks be bought? And if you see that really become pronounced during the next pullback, I think that that's really the big tell for the bull side of gold. What's your take on the price action?
Well, Patrick, as you can see from the chart on page two, this big run-up in gold started around 2001. It was modest at first. It really started to get going around 2005, and it started to turn parabolic in 2007. I really want to focus on 2007, and I'm going to come back to that. But first, let's talk about the rest of the story. We ended up having this massive run-up after 2007, that blow-off top in 2011. It got ahead of itself, and this was the reaction to a loss of confidence and an expectation that what was going to happen was governments were going to have to debase the value of money through inflation. It turned out, to the surprise of a lot of people, myself very much included, that central banks were able to pull some pretty fancy footwork, and they managed to conjure money out of thin air with quantitative easing to support asset markets and delay the inevitable. We never really dealt with the problem of too much debt. We haven't really dealt with the problems that led to the 2008 financial crisis yet. And we've managed to kind of chug along here and support the stock market to new all-time highs for the last 10 years. Take a look now at what you see in the last 6 months of another move up that started in the end of 2018, and it wasn't much bigger than other moves that you had seen. It got up to around 1300, a little pullback, and then boy, there's that really steep move up from 1300 to where we are now at 1510 on this chart. That looks like a signal that maybe it is the beginning of something really big. And I think that's exactly what it is a signal that this is the beginning of a move up that's probably going to be a really, really big move up. I would say to at least $2,500 per ounce, probably a lot more than that. But now let's go back to 2007. Look at the similarity of the first half of 2007 and that big move up, which was, in fact, if you look at the years before it, gold had been moving up. It started to accelerate in 2005 into 2006. Then there was a really big move in the first half of 2007. That was, in fact, the signal that something really big was beginning. Okay, but then look at what happened in the second half of 2007 and 2008. My point here is not to sound bearish, which some people keep thinking in listening to Macro Voices that I'm bearish on gold. Nothing could be farther from the truth. What I'm pointing out is simply that there is so much similarity between where we are right now and that top in the middle to the end of 2007. It's very possible that we see a pullback to 1300 or even lower before the really big move to the upside gets going. So my point is not that I'm not bullish gold. I'm extremely bullish gold. I just want people to be careful and realize we're up $200 in 2 months. There's plenty of room for a technical correction that could take us considerably lower to better buying opportunities. I wouldn't be chasing the price too hard here. Hopefully you've owned gold since 2007, as I have, and you've got a core position. But as far as speculative, really adding leverage to really try to ride a big move up, I'm going to wait for a pullback before I jump into that strategy. I'm glad to already have some gold now, so I've profited modestly in this move up, even though I was wrong. I didn't think this move up was coming. I thought we were going to go lower first. It seems like I was wrong, but I'm going to look for an opportunity to really start buying aggressively when we get a pullback. But I do think that just as that move in 2007 was a signal that the beginning of something really big was upon us, I think the move that we've seen now is also a signal of that. Just remember, these signals come with pullbacks after them. So don't chase it too fast. That's my message here.
All right. Well, listen, if we go to page three, we have that silver chart, and there's no sign of that bigger picture breakout on silver the way we have on gold. And it was really interesting because Variant Perception put out a recent piece, our friends over there put out a piece saying silver to continue to outperform gold. And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, when do you think silver really starts to get that kick from gold to the upside and really start to see that momentum build there? Do you think silver is going to have its day in the sun here?
Oh, I definitely think silver will have its day in the sun. When you get into the speculative exuberance phase with these precious metals moves, usually silver is basically gold on steroids. It's turbo gold. But that works in both directions. Let's go back again and look at the 2007 event, comparing page 2 and page 3. What we're looking at here is you see a bigger move down on a percentage basis in 2007. There was a bigger move up, it was a sharper move up, and it's a bigger move down. So it's more exaggerated moves. Silver is both a precious metal and an industrial metal. And that means that if you're going to have a stock market crash, which I think is very possible that we have some really serious turbulence in equity markets and possibly in bond markets at the same time, there is a good chance in a deep economic recession that silver will sell off more than gold will. So there's a caution there. It's, you know, leverage works in both ways, but silver tends to be gold on steroids. I agree that it hasn't really caught up with gold yet. If you want to ratio trade it where you're long silver and short gold to try to arbitrage out that ratio, maybe that makes sense. But to say, hey, it looks to me like you know, there's a magic pill here. I can buy silver because it hasn't moved yet. But since gold did, silver is certain to move big. Well, remember, gold might have a pullback before it goes even higher. And silver could have a pullback too. And it would be surprising to me if the stock market were crashing if silver had a bigger pullback than gold.
Right. And so when we look at pages 4 and 5, I have the GDX, the gold miners ETF, as well as the GDXJ, which is the junior gold. And what I find fascinating is that while on a percentage basis, they've had great performance for the last 6 months. But what's amazing is that when you look at the monthly charts going back a decade or more, I mean, the big move to the upside hasn't even begun. If this breakout's for real, there's got to be more upside to this. What's your take on these miners?
Patrick, the usual argument for the gold miners is that they provide leverage to the gold price because as gold goes up in price, the miners tend to become much more profitable. The thing to remember, and I don't think it's really a risk anymore, and this is a bullish reason to think seriously about the miners. What I had really been concerned about with the miners is if you got a further move down in the price of gold below $1,000, let's say, the miners would be absolutely devastated because at that price, it's not just that they're not very profitable, it's they're going out of business. It's really, really drastic. So when I became concerned that this dollar liquidity squeeze could put more pressure on the price of bullion, I really thought it created a lot of extra risk for gold miners. Now that it seems like we're really seeing a very strong breakout to the upside, I'm not so worried about that. So I feel a lot better about the gold mining shares down here. Keep in mind, they are still stocks. Stock market in general is probably going to get hit if we get into another major financial crisis. GDX sold off in 2008. It will sell off again. Look at the size of that 2008 sell-off. That's a gift horse if it happens. You want to be buying the bottom there. But just keep in mind at these levels, if you think a stock market crash is coming, the mining stocks are going to get nailed. But in the long-term picture, I think that the outlook for mining shares is excellent.
So, Eric, what can our listeners expect in the coming weeks and months from us starting to cover gold more?
Patrick, Macro Voices has always focused on sophisticated investors, family offices, high net worth individuals, and people who are serious about their investing. So there's a lot of topics like vaulting of precious metals, the notion of different jurisdictional comparisons. One of the widely accepted pieces of advice is at least some of your gold holdings, if you're a high net worth family or individual, should be in a legal jurisdiction other than the one that you live in. Okay, if that's the case, where do you want to consider? Switzerland's not what it used to be in terms of their independence of banking and privacy laws. There are places like Australia. There's some really good deals in some of the Central American countries, but are there risks there that you need to be concerned about? So the whole private vaulting thing, we need to cover that. We need to get into allocated versus unallocated bullion accounts, physical versus paper instruments, different mechanisms of leverage. If you want to use leverage and you're expecting a really big move, as I am, do you use something like mining shares or junior mining shares, which are a very leveraged way to play the price of gold, or do you just use leverage in the futures market? What are the trade-offs between those things? I want to cover the more advanced topics that you're not getting anywhere else. There are so many precious metals podcasts that are doing all of the usual topics about how central banks are supposedly conspiring to suppress the price of gold and so forth. I don't even want to waste our time debunking that nonsense. There is certainly plenty of truth to the fact that the gold market is manipulated just like all other markets are. There's more misinformation, frankly, than there is reality about gold price manipulation out there on the internet. I don't really have time for that. I want to do gold for grown-ups and talk about why, as Ronnie Sterfala said in this interview, gold can be an emotional metal for a lot of people. I want to take the emotion out of it and do gold for grown-ups and really focus on the topics that are of interest to serious investors looking at how to hedge against absolutely unavoidable devaluation of fiat currency in the coming decade and the paradigm shift that Ray Dalio has written about. So we're going to be trying to focus on the more advanced, serious topics. I call it gold for grown-ups. I don't mean to offend anybody. If you're absolutely convinced that there's a secret cabal of central bankers manipulating the gold price, that's fine. You're entitled to your views. There's lots of podcasts that talk about it for hours on end. I don't want to do that on Macro Voices. We're going to talk about some of the issues like comparing jurisdictions for where you might store your physical gold and that kind of thing. But Patrick, speaking of what's coming in weeks ahead, I want to focus on the 21st of September because that's when the Money Show in Toronto is hosting a special session called the All-Stars of Options. Now, you can't have an All-Stars of Options in Canada without Patrick Ceresna headlining the speaking list. So who else is going to be speaking with you? What's it about? And how can our listeners find out about attending?
Right. So in this chart book, there's the link to register. So just download the chart book and click the link. It's free to attend. And I'm still actually going to be sorting out the final topic I'm going to be speaking about. It'll be posted there by next week, but it's free to attend. It's on the September 20th and 21st. Make sure all of our listeners that can make it out to Toronto for then make it out, say hello. We'll probably arrange a time to go out for drinks and some sort of a meetup afterwards as well. Richard Croft and Sarah Potter will also be talking there with me. And so it's going to be a great event, and put it on your calendar, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of our members out there.
And also on that last page in the chart book, there's a link for the free trial of Big Picture Trading. Folks, that's where you can learn more about what Patrick does. You can also find out about the calendared straddle strategy, which has worked so well for playing this equity market. Today's episode of Macro Voices was made possible by Top Traders Unplugged. Don't forget to go to toptradersunplugged.com/macro to claim your free copy of the many flavors of trend following and subscribe to their podcast as well. You'll be glad you did. For information on sponsoring Macro Voices, please visit macrovoices.com/sponsor info. And of course, remember to register your free account at macrovoices.com. The benefit to you is you'll receive our research roundup email, which provides links to all of the best content that we can find on the internet each week. Patrick, tell them what they can expect in this week's research roundup.
Well, this week, you're going to find the transcript for today's interview, as well as the link to Ronnie's In Gold We Trust report and the chart book that we discussed in the post game. There's also an interesting article from PIMCO asking the question if interest rates are naturally negative, and a link to that variant perception article suggesting that silver will continue to outperform gold. So you'll find this and so much more in this week's research roundup. That does it for this week's episode. We appreciate all the feedback and support we get from our listeners, and we're always looking for suggestions on how we can make the program even better. Now, for those of our listeners that write or blog about the markets and would like to share that content with our listeners, send us an email at researchroundup@macrovoices.com or tag it with the MVRR hashtag on Twitter, and we'll include it in our weekly distributions. If you have not already, follow our main Twitter account at Macro Voices for all the most recent updates and releases. You can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric S. Townsend, and myself at Patrick Ceresna. On behalf of Eric Townsend and myself, thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Macro Voices is made possible by sponsorship from BigPictureTrading.com, the Internet's premier source of online education for traders. Please visit BigPictureTrading.com for more information. please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free listener discussion forums and research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. You can email questions for the program to mailbag@macrovoices.com, and we'll answer your questions on the air from time to time in our mailbag segment. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts Eric Townsend and Patrick Ceresna shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices. Macro Voices is made possible by sponsorship from BigPictureTrading.com and by funding from Fourth Turning Capital Management, LLC. For more information, visit MacroVoices.com.